Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Now, anyone getting a pension or planning to at some point or hoping to at some point, listen up. On Tuesday, a judge ruled that the bankrupt city of Detroit is allowed to renege on its pension obligations, that on the same day that in Illinois a landmark bill passed that would roll back the pension benefits to Detroit city workers. To change the benefits promised to future retirees is one thing, but to roll back the benefits of current retirees is another. And it's not just happening with government workers, it's happening in the private sector too. So my next guest says this is a wage theft on a huge scale. He is Ross Eisenbray, vice president of the liberal think tank, the Economic Policy Institute. Welcome back to WNYC, Ross Eisenbray.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And listeners, we can take your calls on what you think about this news. 212-433-WNYC, the news coming out of Detroit, the news coming out of Illinois, if you heard that, and the larger trend. And does anybody have experiences along these lines, perhaps with your private company? 212-433-9692. Ross, let's start with Detroit. Federal Judge Stephen Rhodes ruled that Detroit's pensions would be treated the same as any other contract in the bankruptcy. Is this a first?
It is a first to my knowledge, and it's particularly disturbing because there's a constitutional provision in Michigan that says that this is not just any other contract, that they're really sacrosanct and the state has no authority to do anything but deliver on its pension promise.
And the judge ruled that federal bankruptcy law, now that the city is officially entering bankruptcy, was ruled to be a higher governing authority than the Michigan state constitution. Has that ever been tested before, anything like it? You're not a lawyer.
Has it ever been? I am a lawyer, and I can't say that that a constitutional provision like this has ever been overridden in bankruptcy before.
And you're clearly against this decision. We'll put that on the record. It's obvious. You said in a statement that this constitutes wage theft on a huge scale. But tell us what you think the alternative is. If the unfunded pension liability of Detroit is estimated at somewhere between $3.5 and $8 billion out of an estimated $18 billion total in city debt, so a significant chunk, if the city was prevented from touching the pension obligations, how else could they resolve this?
Well, the pension obligations don't have to be paid off today. The Detroit's real problem is a cash flow problem. The judge found that the city is bankrupt because, on an ongoing basis, it can't pay its bills. The pension obligations could be set aside. I think there's real argument that they're not as big as the state or as Kevin Orr has said they are. He says they're $3.5 billion, but even if they are, they don't have to be paid off today. And what Detroit's problem can't be solved by doing away with its pension obligations. Let's say it has, as the state has claimed, an $18 billion debt, and that this is, as the state claims, $3.5 billion. Well, the problem isn't solved by doing away with that pension liability. It's a help to the city to have those obligations reduced, but I think the fair thing is to stand back a little bit and say, how did this happen? What has happened to Detroit, and who is responsible, really, for the situation? And I think it's clearly not the employees who have gone to work year after year and delivered their services, done exactly what was required of them, and have been promised deferred wages in the form of pensions. They are not the problem.
Who is the problem?
The problem is, among many others, the state itself, which made deals with previous mayors to provide hundreds of million dollars a year in, or $100 million approximately a year in revenue sharing, and reneged on that. If that money had been in Detroit's coffers and had been earning interest or had been in the pension plan and invested in earning 8% or 7% a year, the situation would be very different. The state in many ways is responsible for Detroit's problems, and instead of admitting its responsibility and making a real financial commitment to save Detroit, it's done the exact opposite. It's turned its back on the city and gone to the federal government for this bankruptcy intervention.
But here we are. So what's the alternative? How could you resolve this without touching pensions?
You could. They could have gone into bankruptcy and walled off the pensions. That the bankruptcy filing itself could have walled them off. It's in the bankrupt's power to decide what the extent of the bankruptcy is going to be and
although
what are the assets.
The judge in the case,
involved,
noting that there are 100,000 individual creditors, said that it would be impracticable to have Detroit negotiate concessions with each of the creditors and that it would take forever. And if this bankruptcy is in part to get the city back on its feet, this is necessary to be able to provide the basics like streetlights and an adequate police force.
Right,
does he not have a point?
No, it's beside the point, which is that the judge had the power to accept the bankruptcy petition that didn't include the pensions.
There was a version like that?
It wasn't presented by the city that way, but he could have told the city, no, come back and present me a bankruptcy petition that doesn't include the pensions.
Are there other people, other creditors, who are going to get paid in full by the city of Detroit while the pensioners take this bath?
There will be attorneys who are paid in full while they're working on the bankruptcy. Their past creditors are all subject to the taking a reduction in what's owed to them. But there are a lot of people who will be paid, you know, on an ongoing basis as this proceeds, including consultants and lawyers for the bankruptcy.
Ross Eisenbray, my guest on WNYC, Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute, as we talk about this precedent being set by the bankruptcy in Detroit, where people who are being paid pensions are actually going to see reductions in their pensions despite the state constitution prohibition against that. Then there's Illinois, where the state passed legislation that would allow the pension obligations to be rolled back. Is that also not just on future pensioners but on current retirees?
It is only on future pensioners. It's on people who have worked, however, for a whole career, who have worked, let's say, 20, 25 years and are about to retire, haven't retired yet, they will see their cost of living adjustments decreased, and they'll lose tens of thousands of dollars over their retirement that was promised to them and that they've already worked for.
And this has immediate implications in the city of Chicago, I understand. They're in the middle of trying to work out a budget and negotiate with their municipal unions. So now with this new state law, the unions are in a weaker negotiating position. Does this mean Chicago city workers are going to get slammed with respect to the pensions that they've been getting so far as workers?
I think that the city, the mayor would like to do that probably, but the Illinois Supreme Court has not ruled on the constitutional protection of pensions in Illinois. This is not a bankruptcy. It's very different from Detroit. The state is financially healthy. It's the fifth largest economy among the states in the nation. It's a very wealthy state that is undertaxed by comparison with other states and can afford to meet its pension obligations. And unlike Detroit, there just is no argument that that it can't be done.
No one
can seriously argue that Illinois doesn't have the money to meet its obligations.
Let's take a phone call. Gail in Suffern, you're on WNYC. Gail, thank you for calling in.
Hi. I'm a retired Army officer, and I came in the military as an enlisted person in 1980. And one of the guarantees that I had was 100% medical coverage. And that never happened because when I retired, I had to go under managed health care, either, TRICARE. Either I would pay a low copay under managed care, or I could pay out-of-pocket expenses to go anywhere I want, but that would be 20%. So that's where I'm at. And the military...
So the military retiree health expense promises have been degraded.
Oh, significantly. They promised, the government promised us 100% medical coverage, and that never happened when I retired.
So what's your reaction to what's going on in Detroit in light of your experience?
Well, the thing is that the same thing happened when the military couldn't pay its personnel, so they kind of degraded the retirement system when we were having the meltdown in finances.
Mm-hmm. Gail, thank you, and I'm sorry to hear that story. Jerry in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, earlier you had a segment regarding Barack Obama and his grand commitment to fighting inequality. Here is a big problem, an amazing, whopping problem, an attack on working people, an attack on unions. He has a chance in his speech to at least show some sense of outrage and register from the bully pulpit that this should not be the direction that this country takes if we are to fight income inequality. But he says nothing. This was a brilliant opportunity. We know that what's really going on here is an overall attempt to bust unions.
Jerry, I'm going to leave it there for time, but to his point, is there something that the President of the United States could do to come in and bail out Detroit, or at least bail out Detroit's pensioners?
I don't think the federal government has a responsibility. I think the responsibility really lies with the Michigan state government. On the other hand, Detroit is an important city. It's a population with 750,000 people, who many of whom are desperately poor. And yes, the federal government should be doing much more than it has, not to get involved, I think, in this pension issue, but to invest in Detroit, to create jobs in Detroit, to do whatever it can to help. The real problem, which is Detroit is desperately poor. It's a city whose white population, which was at one point 1.5 million people, is completely gone. There are 70,000 white residents left in Detroit, and they took their money. They took the property values of Detroit with them. And
if Detroit
and jobs,
is poor,
that's the problem.
If Detroit is poor because the auto industry isn't what it used to be, then why sink money into the locality?
No. That is not Detroit's problem. Detroit is poor because everybody with any money left Detroit over a period of 50 years, starting in the 1950s and going right on through to today. There's been a tremendous disinvestment. The auto industry left Detroit, began leaving Detroit in the 1950s. They built their new plants in the suburbs. They built their new plants in the south, and eventually in Mexico and China. They left Detroit behind. It has very little to do with the financial fortunes of the auto industry.
One more call, Paul in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. Just two quick questions. One is, in the private sector, a lot of companies have gone into bankruptcy. The courts have allowed them to eliminate or renegotiate pension liabilities. So why is this not appropriate in the public sector as well? And the second question is, what happens to bondholders? I mean, they're suffering as well. And bondholders have not only funded the city, but they've also funded unfunded pension liabilities for the pensioners, and they're not getting their money back either. So how can you separate one class, as your guest is suggesting, separate one class of investors and say, well, they should be taking it out of the bankruptcy? I don't think that they should.
Paul, why not see it, though, as bondholders are taking a risk? They're making an investment in the, for a return. That's a risk. Pensioners are guaranteed their pensions by the state constitution. They're not in jobs that are supposed to be that kind of risk.
It's an interesting argument, but when you look at it from that perspective, then you could say that bondholders should be getting more money than they're getting paid because of the liabilities associated with bankruptcy or the possibility of losing your investment. But in the private sector, companies that go into bankruptcy, the courts have allowed them to renegotiate their pensions or eliminate their pensions. Mm-hmm. So why is that not appropriate for the public sector, like cities for Detroit?
Paul, thank you. And Ross, why not?
It's actually not true. The courts do not let them renegotiate the pensions for retirees after they've worked. That it's simply not true.
Doesn't it happen because
if there's money in the pension plan, the pension plan in the private sector is obligated to pay those pensions.
So the money in the
enough money in the plan, then the federal government steps in with a pension guarantee program to protect the retirees.
And that doesn't apply to state and local governments.
That does not apply to state and local governments.
There we leave it. The story of Detroit's bankruptcy just beginning, really, and a take on the pension aspect of it, as ruled on in court the other day, from Ross Eisenbray, Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute. Ross, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, we're going to hear a few clips from the news conference that did finally take place, if you heard us earlier waiting for it to begin. Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio and his newly named police commissioner, Bill Bratton. Then we'll talk about donor families, that is, people who come from sperm donors, egg donors, etc., and a new push to allow them to meet their siblings. So stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.